Thatcher, yeah. Ross would make sure Agent Thatcher zeroed right in on him as a target of the investigation. Winters reined in the urge to throw something. Him, a suspect. Again. It had been bad enough the first time, but to have it happen again? It was almost impossible to believe. Yet Ben Jolly had called his cell phone and told him so not 30 minutes before. It paid to have buddies in the department. At least he'd have an information flow while he was on his leave of absence. He wasn't especially worried that they'd accuse him of anything. He hadn't done anything wrong. He stared down at the phone, then at the computer. He couldn't just call to ask the hospital about that nurse's aide. Word would get back to Thatcher, and fast. And while he wasn't worried they would find anything, he also knew they could force him out on unpaid leave while they scratched their asses and checked it out, still to find nothing. How to get access to the hospital's personnel files? He wasn't good enough at computers to even attempt that one himself. He'd just have to find someone who was. Asheville, North Carolina, Tuesday, March 6th, 2:25 p.m.
Well?
Ross stood in the doorway of the conference room she'd designated Stephen's office. Stephen pushed his chair back from the table, rising to his feet. He wiped his hand across the back of his neck and arched his back to stretch muscles that had remained immobile too long. "I find your hospitality lacking, Lieutenant Ross," he said with a tired smile. "It's got to be 150 degrees in here." Ross leaned against the door frame.
"It does get a bit toasty," she admitted, "especially when the sun comes in that little window."
Stephen loosened his tie another inch and unbuttoned his collar button. "A little toasty? What's this room like in August? Never mind, I don't want to know."
"It was our interrogation room,"
she grinned, and Stephen was taken aback by the impact on her face. Ross, with a smile, was an attractive woman.
"But the state ruled it cruel and unusual for the untried. They built us a state-of-the-art interrogation room a few years back, and now we save this room for esteemed guests."
She sobered and pointed at the skinny stack of files.
"I told you it wasn't much, but it's all records turned up. The testimony?"
Her voice hardened as her gaze fell on the two photographs clipped to the front of one of the manila folders.
"The pictures?"
Stephen picked up the pictures by the corners, grimly studying one, then the other. The first was a young Mary Grace Winters, maybe 18 years old, holding a 2-year-old boy with blonde hair and a 2-teeth smile on her hip. Her lips were bent back in a gross parody of a smile that didn't come close to reaching her troubled eyes. The second picture was Mary Grace a few years later, in the hospital immediately after her fall down the stairs. One side of her face was swollen almost beyond recognition. Her blonde hair had been butchered by some well-meaning nurse to enable her care during what would become a 3-month stay in Hotel General Hospital. The hair near a bulging bandage was shaved to the scalp, the rest of her hair cut about an inch long all the way around. On a personal level, the pictures twisted his gut. On a professional level, they matched his profile of domestic abuse. Unfortunately, there wasn't a shred of documentation to show Winters had ever been accused of domestic abuse, and that fact bothered him. He carefully slid the photos into a folder, then looked up to see Ross studying him, her expression troubled. Stephen moved his shoulders in a combination stretch shrug. "I don't know. Somehow I expected to see at least one account of someone in this precinct suspecting him. After all, a cop's wife and little boy were abducted."
"At the time, the investigating officers decided she'd run away with the boy,"
Ross said. Not all of them, Stephen thought. Not Lenny Farrell's dad.
"Yeah, I saw that. They thought Mary Grace Winters ran away because her husband was having an affair with the next-door neighbor."
He watched Ross's face tighten.
"Do you believe that, Lieutenant?"
Ross nodded, a frown twisting her lips.
It was certainly plausible. Rob's always been very popular with the ladies. But what's always bothered me is the boy. Rob Winters seemed to love his son almost to distraction, grieved for little Robbie for years. I can't see him harming the boy. He never believed his wife ran away. He was always convinced some perp had stolen them both out of revenge.
She shrugged.
That's not impossible either. Winters has made a lot of arrests over the years. Truth is, I don't know, Thatcher. That's why I agreed to bring you in.
Stephen looked down at the photos again. I'd like to talk to Winters as soon as possible.
I can give you his address. He's not here today. He took some paid leave,
she added, answering his obvious next question before he could ask. Okay. What about the investigating officers from 7 years ago?
You can talk to Farrell, but not York.
Stephen straightened his tie. Why not York?
He died last year.
Stephen frowned. Line of duty? She shook her head.
Heart attack. The man never met a fried drumstick he didn't like.
Stephen chuckled. So he died happy. She grinned again.
As a deep-fried clam. Farrell lives up in the mountains near Boone. You can see him tomorrow morning. He's out on a fishing trip with some kids from the local scouting troop today,
she said as he gathered his files.
You'll like Gabe Farrell. He's a straight shooter.
I hear his wife makes a mean sweet potato pie.
Sinfully so.
Chicago, Tuesday, March 6th, 5:01 p.m. It was 5 o'clock. Finally. Max closed the book he'd been pretending to read. He'd listened to her answer phones all afternoon, that sexy southern drawl seeping through the walls. He'd listened as she prepared to leave, wondering if she was thinking about him. He'd sure as hell been thinking about her. All afternoon. Wondering where he'd take her to dinner. Anticipating the evening as he'd anticipated nothing in a very long time. Visualizing kissing her goodnight. Hoping she'd be equally responsive to his kiss as she'd been to that simple touch on her lower lip. God, he'd barely touched her and he'd been ready to come. She'd shivered every time he brushed her lip with his thumb, her eyes growing wider with each breath. She was a novice to whatever she was feeling, those eyes of hers radiating trepidation, then wonder. There'd been something else there, too, he thought. Worrying at his own lower lip with his teeth. She'd been startled when he approached her. Caroline was obviously a bit skittish. A light tapping at his door broke into his thoughts. Caroline. Just thinking her name conjured all kinds of interesting mental images. He sat up straighter in his chair. Come! And managed to keep a smile on his face, despite the little stab of disappointment, when a tall young woman with a short cap of dark hair entered. Evie, what can I do for you? Evie Wilson tentatively approached. Talk about skittish. The young woman moved like a colt, long-legged with bursts of uncertainty. He had no idea if she'd be a good secretary when Caroline graduated or not. He wouldn't be able to tell until she got over her initial crush and stopped looking at him like he was a movie star. Or sports hero, his mind mocked. He abruptly pushed the unwanted thought aside.
I just wanted to know if you needed anything from the library,
she offered, her voice small. No thanks, Evie. He tried for a reassuring smile. He wasn't good at warm and fuzzy. He was better at being called sir and doctor and having his requests immediately fulfilled. But the smile must have done some good as Evie blushed to the roots of her too short hair and backed away, stammering a goodbye. Max sighed. He didn't want a young secretary. He wanted an older, more efficient secretary that wouldn't swoon over him. After Caroline, of course. She could swoon over him as often as she liked. He'd just finished locking his desk drawer when another knock sounded at his door. Come on in, he called. Then he sighed quietly as the overpowering scent of perfume came drifting across the room. Dr. Monica Shaw. He'd been avoiding her all day.
He lifted his head to find her standing in his open doorway, silently watching him with a predatory look. He knew that look. Elise had often worn it. He knew it now for the falseness it represented. Shaw's brightly painted mouth curved up in what he thought she intended to be an alluring smile. He fought the urge to scream for help.
"Can I help you, Dr. Shaw?"
She slinked forward, her hips seeming to move independently.
"Please, call me Monica."
Mac sat down in his chair and steepled his fingers together atop his desk, hoping he looked unapproachable.
"Then can I help you, Monica?"
"I certainly hope so."
God, she was purring. He thought of a cat waiting to pounce on a poor mouse. Too bad they didn't make mouse holes 6.5 feet tall.
"I was hoping you'd let me take you out to dinner."
She paused and perched one hip against the corner of his desk so that she was leaning toward him. Her perfume was overpowering to the point of gagging him. He swallowed hard as she smiled again.
"To welcome you to the department."
"Well, thank you for the offer, Monica, but..."
She leaned a few inches closer.
"I know this fabulous little French restaurant on Michigan Avenue. I made reservations for 7.
Max leaned his chair way back, hearing the springs creak in protest.
"That's very nice of you, Monica, but I have other plans tonight."
Her smile drooped, and she pouted.
"Really, Max, how could you have other plans tonight? You've been in Chicago less than a week."
Her fingers inched toward his folded hands. He yanked them off the desk and folded his arms across his chest. "I have other plans." He stood awkwardly and reached for his cane, but quicker on the draw, Shaw reached it first. He held out his hand for his cane. Instead, she slipped her hand into his.
"Cancel them,"
she murmured.
"I guarantee I can make it worth your while."
He pulled his hand back and folded his arms across his chest again.
"I don't want to cancel my plans. Now, if you'll kindly hand me my cane, I'll say good evening."
"But..."
The door to his office opened, and both Max and Monica turned to look, Max praying it wasn't Caroline. He'd managed to whisk the young co-eds under the mat this morning, but he knew Caroline felt especially vulnerable around Shaw. His eyes opened wide as David entered the room.
"Max, you're not planning on standing me up, are you?"
And to his consternation, David marched across his office and threw an arm around his shoulders. He stuck his free hand out to greet Monica.
"Hi, I'm David, Max's date for the evening."
Monica's jaw dropped, exposing several silver fillings in the back of her mouth. Very unattractive, Max thought, struggling to keep his face straight and his laughter controlled. Monica was completely horrified. Halfway recovering, she reached to shake David's hand.
"The two of you, know each other?"
"Oh, yeah,"
David answered easily, pumping her hand in an overly hearty shake.
"We went to Harvard together."
He bestowed a tender look at Max.
"We were, roommates."
His voice softened.
"Weren't we, Max?"
Eyes wide, Max nodded, unable to speak. Monica had taken a step backwards. David pulled him close and laid his head on his shoulder.
"We were practically inseparable from the time we were, well, boys, wouldn't you say, Max?"
Max nodded again. He cleared his throat.
"Inseparable. So you see, Monica, I really cannot have dinner with you, tonight or any other night. Would you mind?"
He held out his hand and wriggled his fingers. Monica handed him his cane. She recovered remarkably, her face going from apoplectic to apologetic.
"I'm sorry, Max. I didn't know you were involved with someone."
She glanced at David, who was smiling beatifically.
"It's nice to meet you, David. Enjoy your evening.
Thank you, David nodded, the picture of innocence. We're having pizza, aren't we, Max? Max gulped. Pizza. He'd offered David pizza the night before. Dinner plans with Caroline had obliterated the memory. Pizza, yes. Good night, Monica. They watched as she walked out, her hips no longer moving independently. They listened until they heard the outer door close, then Max turned on David with a scowl, forcibly removing his brother's arm from his shoulder. What the bloody hell do you think you're doing? David grinned. Saving you from that woman. You didn't want to go out with her, did you? Max tried to look stern. No, I didn't, but that gave you no right to... David poked him in the ribs. Don't be ungrateful. It might have been politically incorrect. Might have been, Max exploded. Do you know what trouble... David shrugged. But it'll keep you out of her clutches for a good long time. He grinned again, and Max felt his heart melt. This was his baby brother, who'd always been able to use that outrageous sense of humor to make even the worst of days bearable. Let's go out for pizza. Max grimaced. I really do have other plans, Dave. David frowned. You're standing me up for real? For who? For Carrot. His voice caught as panic grabbed at him. Oh, God, I hope she didn't hear any of that. He rushed to the door to the outer office as fast as his legs would permit. Shit. She sat at her desk, her face in her hands, her shoulders shaking. With a menacing frown at David, Max crossed the remaining distance to Caroline's desk. He sat on the corner of her desk and touched her shoulder gently. Caroline, I don't know what you heard, but I never would have gone to dinner with Monica, and this is only my idiot brother. Her shoulders shook harder. I wouldn't have made plans with you only to break them, honest. You were going to break plans with me, David inserted blandly, watching the scene from far enough away so that Max would have had to stand up and walk a few steps to hit him. Shut up, David, Max hissed. You've done enough damage for one day. He turned back to Caroline, who still hid her face behind her hands. Please don't cry. My brother is just leaving. Caroline moved her fingers wide enough to peer through.
Oh, no, don't make him go, she gasped. Please.
She slid her hands down from her eyes to cover her mouth, revealing the tears streaming down her cheeks.
Oh, my Lord, I...
She started coughing, and Max realized with supreme relief that she wasn't crying after all, but laughing so hard she was choking. He gamely patted her back as she tried to regain her breath. Wheezing, she pounded her fist on her desk.
I haven't laughed so hard.
She started coughing again. Get her some water, would you, Dave? With that same imperturbable grin on his face, David complied.
Thank you,
Caroline managed and drained the glass.
Oh, Max, the look on her face when she left here, priceless.
Max felt his face break into a relieved grin. This is my brother, David.
I know. We met before he went in there.
Caroline shook with residual giggles.
Thank you, David. That woman has been a thorn in my side for 5 years.
David inclined his head. Glad to oblige. So how long has she worked here? Caroline chuckled.
5 years. 5 very long years.
She turned to Max, her eyes bright blue and sparkling.
If you two want to go out for pizza, I'd hate to be a third wheel.
Something relaxed inside him. Her wonderful laugh put him completely at ease. Well, we could invite Missy or Steffi for you. Her eyes narrowed, but her dimple appeared.
Over my dead body, Buster.
Captivated, he couldn't take his eyes from her face. She was so pretty when she laughed. Beat it, Dave, he said, not bothering to look over his shoulder.
Max, That doesn't seem fair. He came all the way down here to meet you.
He was probably dropping off a car to some rich guy, weren't you, David?
No, David said from behind him, his voice heavy with sorrow. I rode all the way down here just to see my dear brother.
He's a ham,
Caroline remarked to Max. Always has been, Max answered. Beat it, David. I'll buy you a gross of those beers you like so much. Just go away.
David sighed dramatically.
Watch him, Caroline. He'll drop you like a hot potato when you begin to bore him.
I think I'll just go drown my sorrows at Moe's.
What's Moe's?
Caroline picked up her purse and smiled up at Max when he helped her into her coat. His heart did a slow turn, and he was forced to at least mentally thank David for making her eyes shine like that.
It's a place we used to eat when we were kids, before Max became important.
David lifted his eyes to the ceiling.
Before he scorned me for another.
Caroline grinned up at Max.
Where had you planned to take me?
Max shrugged. I'd planned to take you to Morton's Steakhouse, but I have a sneaking suspicion we're all going to Moe's for double-decker cheeseburgers and onion rings. The approval in her eyes made the disappointment of changing his plans somewhat palatable. David winked at Caroline.
And I thought he'd forgotten his more humble origins.
I'm driving a 57 Corvette tonight. Want to come with me? She looked up at Max with a cheeky smile.
Depends. What are you driving?
Mercedes. He gave David a warning look that had absolutely no effect.
Mine's a classic, David wheedled. Red and white, bubble headlights.
Caroline tightened one corner of her mouth, pretending to consider, then shook her head.
Sorry. German luxury beats American pie. You do have a leather interior, don't you, Max?
Yes, he answered dryly. I can bring you back to get your car later.
No need. I took the bus this morning.
David's jaw dropped.
You don't have a car?
He asked, horrified. Caroline shook her head and threw a pointed glance at Max.
Starter's busted. Can't afford to have it fixed on a secretary's salary.
Your boss is a pig, David said, and took her arm, escorting her out of the office. Caroline looked over her shoulder, her smile now calmer but just as strong.
No, I think he's a pretty nice guy.
Max's heart took another slow turn, this time ending in an ungainly flop. He'd forgive David just this once. His brother had made her laugh, something he probably could never have done so easily. And no matter what else happened, Caroline Stewart would leave Moe's with him. Asheville, Tuesday, March 6th, 7:30 p.m.
I still think this is a very bad idea.
Stephen looked over his shoulder, his hand on the door handle of the Two Point Tavern, to find Detective Jonathan Lambert standing stubbornly still, arms crossed over his chest. A streetlight reflected off of Lambert's golden head, creating a heavenly effect.
I'll note in the record, Detective, Stephen answered dryly. You asked if there was anything you could do to help.
He pulled the door open.
This is help.
This is begging for trouble, Lambert grumbled, following Stephen inside nonetheless.
I want to observe all the players in their natural habitat, Stephen murmured.
They're not animals, Thatcher, Lambert gritted, his jaw clenching. Stephen rolled his eyes.
Figure of speech, Lambert. Lighten up.
Stephen looked around at the clientele of the modest little bar. Cops everywhere, some uniformed, others in suits and ties, but all unmistakably cops.
I want to talk to them in their most natural environment. Is that better?
Lambert hadn't lightened up an iota.
Then question the men at the precinct. They come here to relax, not to be spied on.
Stephen turned to face Lambert, all levity gone.
Any cop worth his badge, and without anything to hide, won't mind talking to me. A woman and her child are missing. I certainly hope that means something. He lifted a brow. To all of you. Lambert's mouth twisted. Ironically enough, it didn't mar his good looks one bit. Rob Winters isn't my favorite person, Special Agent Thatcher, but I respect his service record. I won't have his name dragged through the dirt without evidence. Innuendo is insufficient. His eyes roamed the crowd who hadn't yet noticed them. You'll find my opinion to be broadly shared. If not so eloquently stated, Stephen muttered, mentally preparing himself for the attack he'd purposely instigated by insinuating himself where he would be most unwanted. And not a moment too soon, he thought, as Detective Ben Jolly sauntered up to where they stood, clutching a mug of beer in one unsteady hand. From the look of him, the mug hadn't been his first.
"Don't they teach you manners in Riley, Special Agent Thatcher?"
Jolly slurred. "I would have thought you'd know better than to barge in on a private party." "Ben," Lambert warned. But Jolly was apparently on a roll.
"Shut your face, Johnny."
Stephen watched Lambert wince and knew the nickname was as unwelcome as Stephen's own presence.
"Take him to your wine and cheese shop. We don't want him here."
Jolly swerved, coming to a stop mere inches from Stephen's face.
"You think you can come here and get us to talk bad about Rob? No chance, Special Agent Thatcher. There's not a man in this place that wouldn't go to the mat for Rob Winters."
He turned around and raised his mug.
"Right, boys?"
Stephen watched the crowd carefully. The majority of the men responded with an emphatic,
"Right!"
But not all. He memorized the faces of the men who said nothing, paying special attention to the men who looked away. Not everyone in this place hailed Rob Winters as a hero. But Ben Jolly did, and at this very moment, that was trouble enough.
"So go home, Thatcher."
Jolly leaned forward, and Stephen fought the urge to turn away from the overpowering odor of the man's breath. Mixed with stale cigarettes, it was enough to turn the most iron stomach.
"Go home and use all your fancy computers and labs to find out what really happened to Rob's little boy. 'Cause you're wasting every minute you think he did it."
"You sound certain," Stephen commented. "Why?"
"Because I know him,"
Jolly declared, his eyes taking on an impassioned light.
"I trained him when he was no more than a boy himself. Like a son to me."
He swallowed, emotion sneaking up to overwhelm him.
"I held his hand when Robbie disappeared. He loves his boy, Thatcher."
Jolly swallowed again, clearly overcome.
"Make no mistake. Rob Winters could no more have hurt that boy than I could."
Stephen watched as tears clouded the older man's eyes. Jolly was as sincere as he was drunk. Of that, Stephen had no doubt. "How about his wife, Detective? Could Rob have hurt his wife?" Jolly's jaw tightened.
"He was good to that woman. She was a terrible burden to him, but he took care of her. She was depressed all the time, couldn't even tie her own shoes," he said in disgust. "But he kept her in his house, paid her doctor bills, tied her shoes," he added with contempt, "and got nothing in return."
His eyes narrowed meaningfully.
"Nothing."
Stephen felt all the eyes in the place fixed on him, waiting for his next move. "Justice, I would think." He paused, waiting until he saw the flash in Jolly's eyes. "Especially if he made her that way." Bingo, he thought, wincing even as the contents of Jolly's half-empty mug of beer splashed his face and the man's beefy hands grabbed his shoulders, shoving him against the wall.
"Ben!"
Lambert yelled, pulling Jolly away, holding him while three other cops raced forward to help. Lambert passed Jolly to the others, then pulled a crisp white handkerchief from his pocket and handed it to Stephen, visibly trembling with anger.
"Wipe your face,"
he snapped. "And if you value the peace, meet me outside."
Stevens stepped away, pausing at the door to see Lambert motion another man in a suit and tie into the frenzy. The newest suit was Detective Jim Crowley. Tony Ross had introduced him earlier that afternoon.
"Take him home, Jim," Lambert was ordering. "Make sure he gets to bed."
Detective Crowley put his arm around Ben Jolly's shoulders.
"Come on, Ben. You've had enough for one night. Let me take you home to sleep it off."
Crowley hesitated when he passed Stephen, still standing at the door.
"He's not normally like this, Thatcher. He sat with Rob when Robbie was first abducted 7 years ago. He had to sit with him again last night after Rob found out his boy's likely at the bottom of Douglas Lake. Cut him some slack, okay?"
Stephen nodded. "Okay," he said, but thought, "Like hell I will." Lambert strode up, his face a picture of fury.
"You said you'd talk to the men, not incite a damn riot."
Stephen folded Lambert's handkerchief in precise quarters before slipping it in his pocket.
"I'll wash it and return it to you," he said calmly. "Right now, I could use a ride back to my hotel to change my clothes. Then after that, I'm up for wine and cheese if you are."
He let his mouth quirk up.
"Although I'd really prefer a steak, medium rare."
Lambert closed his eyes, obviously biting back what he really wanted to say.
He shook his head and held open the door. "After you, Thatcher. After you."
Chapter 7. University of North Carolina, Charlotte, Tuesday, March 6th, 8:35 p.m. It was a dive. Winters paused just inside the door to let his eyes become accustomed to the smoke-filled darkness. Music played, the bass so heavy it drowned out whatever actual music there was. He scanned the room and located his quarry sitting at a table in the corner, just as the boy said he'd be. It had taken surprisingly little time to locate a computer specialist willing to splash in slightly illegal waters for the right price. It had, in fact, taken more time to drive from Asheville to Charlotte than to find Randy Livermore. He'd chosen UNC Charlotte not because of its computer science program. He would have gone to UNC Asheville for that. He simply didn't want to risk meeting his computer specialist again while on the job. If the kid was willing to hack for profit, it would be only a matter of time before he found himself on the wrong side of the law. Unless he was quite good. Winters hoped Livermore was quite good for his own sake as well as the boy's. Winters started across the room, weaving in and out of dancers, of kids standing around watching the basketball game on a TV suspended over the bar. Duke was playing Maryland and losing. He glanced at the mirror over the bar from the corner of his eye. Good enough. His wig was firmly in place, as was the bushy mustache that made him look like a Milwaukee brewmeister. His own mother wouldn't recognize him. Good enough. He approached the table carefully, sidestepping a puddle of what he hoped was beer. "Randy?" The boy looked up, and Winters had to admit he was surprised. No nerdy geek here, no gangly limbs or horn-rimmed glasses. The boy was muscle-bound, his dark hair long but clean, tied into a ponytail at the base of his neck. Black eyes stared back, aloof.
"Depends." "I'm Trent."
Winters had never used the name before, would never use it again. The boy cocked his head toward an empty place on the bench seat.
"Make it fast." "And make it cash," Winters murmured. "You're not what I expected."
"Neither are you."
Winters raised a brow.
"Fine, then. I'll tell you what I want. You tell me how much it'll cost. I want access to the personnel records at Asheville General Hospital."
Randy looked bored.
"And then what?" "And then you find the current locations of all staff that worked the orthopedic ward 9 years ago."
"And then?"
"And then I pay you, and you never open your mouth again."
Randy frowned. "No messing with records? No..." He shrugged.
No adding or subtracting from payroll? No alteration of certain prescriptions? You'd do that?
I didn't say that. You want that?
Winters chuckled. If he wasn't careful, he might find himself actually liking this kid.
No, just the records, nothing more.
1,000.
500.
He'd been prepared to pay a lot more than 1,000. Randy shrugged yet again.
The way I look at it, you need the info. I need the bucks.
If you could, you would have picked up the phone and called the hospital and asked for what you want to know.
You didn't, and now you're here. You need me.
1,000. Winters felt a grudging admiration for such steadiness in one so young.
Okay, when can I have it?
When do you want it?
Tonight.
Randy blinked, and Winters got the distinct impression the boy was mocking him.
Oh, I got a biology test tomorrow. I have to study.
Winters narrowed his eyes.
So break into the school's database and give yourself an A.
Randy grinned.
Only a B. I wouldn't want to look too greedy.
He rose and gathered his books.
I'll meet you back here at 1 a.m.
Chicago, Tuesday, March 6th, 9 p.m.
You really don't have to walk me up, Max.
Caroline hesitated as the two of them stood next to Max's car, parked outside Caroline's walk-up apartment building.
They don't have an elevator.
Max looked up at the balconies jutting out from the old plain brick building. It was a far cry from his own house. From any place he'd ever lived, for that matter.
Which floor are you on?
3.
2 sets of stairs?
She nodded. He smiled, but it felt grim on his lips.
I can do that. If you'd said you lived on the 5th floor, you'd just be out of luck.
He took a step forward, but she stayed put. He looked over his shoulder to find her lips set in a firm frown. He half turned to face her.
What?
You don't have to do this.
She stood by the door of his Mercedes that looked completely out of place in this neighborhood, her arms crossed over her chest in a gesture he'd already come to associate with a stubborn streak that hid amongst her charm and laughter.
I had a good time tonight, Max. A really wonderful time. You don't have to hurt yourself to walk me to the door.
Caroline, I have many faults, but dating etiquette is not among them.
Impatience, however, was, and he felt his patience waning.
Will you hurry up and let me walk you to your damn door?
She stood frowning a moment longer, then suddenly laughed, her eyes lighting up once more.
Are we a pair or what? Come on, let's go. When we get to the top, I'll make you a cup of coffee.
I was hoping for a bit more than coffee, he thought, making his feet move once she was at his side. I was hoping for a hell of a lot more.
He'd been in a state of wholly frustrated semi-arousal from the moment they'd left Carrington, which, of course, David had found wildly humorous. Max breathed a chuckle, and Caroline looked up at him in question.
What's so funny?
I was just thinking about David.
Max left it at that. Telling her that his brother had made a great display of ordering more breadsticks, baked hard, from Mo when she disappeared into the ladies' room was hardly appropriate. The encouraging, almost debilitating slap on the back, accompanied by the advice Mo had given him as response, was definitely off topic as well. Caroline laughed out loud.
Oh, Lord, that thing with Monica had to be one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Do you mind if I tell it to my best friend? She'd find it entirely vindicating.
They got up a small half-flight of stairs that was her landing, and Max held open her door.
I take it that your friend is not part of Monica's fan club?
Caroline's smile was wry.
No, she's not.
An elderly gentleman was sitting on the stairs as they walked in.
Hi, Mr. Edelman. How are you today?
The old man gave her a smile that almost buried his eyes in wrinkles.
Fine, just fine, Caroline. And yourself?
Fine, just fine.
She almost sang it, and the old man scooted over to make room for them to pass.
"This is my friend Max. Max, meet Cy Edelman."
Max shook hands with the old man, and they continued. At the next landing, two small boys sat outside a door, a collection of cards spread out between them. They were trading, apparently, and one of the boys looked up at Caroline with an expression of consternation.
"Caroline, he wants to trade my holographic Pikachu for two ordinary cards." "One's a Mewtwo,"
the other boy exclaimed, as if that meant something. Caroline bent down to take a look, glancing up at Max from the corner of her eye. She was giving him time to rest, he realized. Part of him appreciated the thought, while part of him rebelled against the notion. Appreciation won out, and he took the time she offered to get his breathing under control and relax his leg muscles while she settled the minor Pokemon trading card dispute. They started back up the stairs, and Max leaned over close to her ear and shuddered. Her scent was driving him crazy.
"You don't have to let me rest. I can make two flights of stairs."
Caroline's eyes opened and her lips parted. He was close, he realized, and knew she knew it, too. Close in proximity and close, well, to something else.
"It's okay,"
she said, her voice barely a murmur.
"I needed to rest, too."
Max stopped, and so did she.
"What?"
She blinked, and the moment was gone.
I hurt my leg a while back and had trouble climbing these stairs while it was healing. I rested every couple steps."
"How did you hurt your leg?"
She shrugged and smiled, but not a bit of it reached her eyes.
"I fell down. I can be remarkably clumsy at times."
She turned and headed up the stairs. He'd intruded on something quite inadvertently. A memory, perhaps? He continued until he reached the second floor. Caroline was standing in the hall, talking to a large orange cat.
"So you're back, Bubba Boy."
She bent over and scratched the cat behind the ears.
"Such a fickle boy you are, coming around only to get fed."
Her accent thickened as she purred to the cat. She looked up and smiled, and Max felt his heart stop. She was beautiful.
"He's a stray, but I call him Bubba. He comes around only when he's got an empty belly, don't you, boy? I feed him sometimes, as do the old ladies across the hall."
As if on cue, the door across the hall opened, and a silver head popped out.
"He's eating, Carol,"
an elderly lady said, her eyes twinkling.
"Don't let him con you."
Caroline laughed and put her key in her door.
"He will, Miss Pulaski, he will, just like he cons you and your sister."
The old lady chuckled, then froze when she spotted Max standing a few feet away.
"My, oh my, Caroline, dear, when you bring home a stray, you really bring home a stray."
Caroline looked at Mrs. Pulaski and followed the old lady's gaze to Max, and coughed. Her eyes were laughing again, even as her mouth frowned.
"Mrs. Pulaski, what a thing to say."
Mrs. Pulaski eyed Max up and down, making him feel very much like a side of beef in the supermarket.
"I'm old, honey, not dead."
She met Max's eyes head on.
"We like Caroline, you understand? Everybody in this building."
Max nodded gravely. "Yes, ma'am." He hadn't a clue what she meant.
"Good. We may be old, but everybody likes Caroline. And I, for one, have a firearm."
Caroline shook her head and reached over to pull Max by the sleeve.
"Good night, Mrs. Pulaski. Come on, Max."
She opened the door to her apartment, and the orange cat sauntered in as if he owned the place. The television was on, and a woman with red hair was curled up in the corner of an old couch, sound asleep. Caroline stopped and looked at the woman, her expression softening.
"That's my best friend Dana. She worked all night last night,"
she murmured.
"For the second night in a row."
What does she do? Max murmured back.
Caroline was quiet for a long moment, so long he wondered if she'd even heard him. Then she sighed, shut off the television, and turned to her kitchen, gesturing for him to follow. He grabbed one of her dinette chairs as he passed the little table and sat the chair down in the corner of the kitchen. Gratefully, he sank down, feeling his hip throb even before it met the chair.
Dana runs a shelter for runaways. She sometimes stays up all night with newcomers who need special help.
Max peeked out of the kitchen. Dana hadn't stirred.
Why is she here?
Caroline looked up from scooping coffee into her coffee maker.
She's watching Tom.
Tom, her son. His stomach tightened. He didn't do well with kids. Maybe Tom was asleep. Maybe he wouldn't have to meet the boy tonight. Maybe...
Mom?
Together, Max and Caroline turned. A young man stood in the kitchen doorway. He filled it. This boy was 14? He had to be 6'1". Caroline smiled uncertainly, and Max remembered her saying men didn't ask her out as often as he thought. Evidently finding a strange man in his kitchen was quite new for young Tom. It was the only thing that would explain the hard-edged distrust that filled the boy's eyes, as expressive as his mother's.
Max stood and stuck out his hand. I'm Max Hunter. You must be Tom.
The boy took his hand and shook it, eyeing him suspiciously.
It's nice to meet you,
he said, his voice obviously polite, and withdrew his hand.
Did you have a good time, Mom?
Caroline smiled again, and this time it was a full reflection of the fun she'd had sharing dinner with him and David.
Yes, I did. Did you do your math homework?
Tom smirked, and in that moment looked just like a tall version of his mother. Very tall.
I did. Did you bring me anything?
She snapped a dish towel, narrowly missing him. Tom exaggerated his escape.
I guess that means no. It means no. Has Dana been asleep long?
Tom frowned.
Since she got here. And she talked in her sleep, too. She was having nightmares. Something about a baby's feet.
Caroline sighed, and Max had the feeling the dream either happened often or had some basis in reality.
I'll deal with it tomorrow. Go on to bed.
Tom hesitated.
Can I eat first?
Without missing a beat, Caroline reached into the refrigerator and tossed him an apple.
Bed.
Tom looked at Max from the corner of his eye.
Mom?
Caroline shook her head firmly.
It'll be all right, Tom. Go to bed.
Tom hesitated, stared at Max another long minute, then turned for the back of the apartment. With distinct discomfort, Max watched Tom retreat, then turned to Caroline, who was simultaneously watching her son and worrying her lower lip.
Look, you're tired and your friend needs her sleep. Why don't I take a rain check on the coffee for another time?
She looked up at him, her expression a mixture of too many things to sort.
Okay. I'm sorry.
He stopped her by laying his finger across her lips. The first time he'd touched her, really touched her, since that morning in his office. Immediately her eyes widened, her cheeks colored, and her breath quickened. He felt his own pulse accelerate. By just touching her mouth, it was truly amazing.
It's okay. Really.
He brushed his finger across her lower lip, feeling her shiver across the inches between them to course down his own spine.
Whoa, this was serious electricity.
Will you have dinner with me tomorrow night?
I can't,
she whispered.
Tom has a game. I never miss them.
Then Thursday night. She blinked.
Okay.
The need to kiss her lips was overwhelming him, but somehow he knew that would be too much too fast. So he tilted up her face and dropped a chaste peck on her cheek.
Good night, Caroline.
She swallowed.
Good night, Max. Good night, Caroline.
A wry voice echoed, mockingly sing-song.
Max whipped around to find the leggy redhead sitting on the edge of Caroline's tiny dinette table, her arms loosely folded across her chest, one russet eyebrow raised in obvious interest, even though her eyes were heavy with fatigue. His own brows snapped together in annoyance at being spied on when he was trying to be a gentleman.
"And you'd be Max Hunter,"
she continued, as if she wasn't a very rude woman.
"I'm Dana Dupinsky, Caroline's friend."
"So I'm told," he responded dryly, "as well as a teen sitter with a narcolepsy problem." Dana grinned, and Max found himself charmed in spite of himself.
"I'm just here to protect Tom from marauding Avon ladies, should they be so foolish to ring the bell. Beyond that, the kid's pretty capable of sitting himself."
She glanced over at Caroline, whose eyes were still wide with shocked embarrassment.
"She doesn't think so, because she's still Tom's mommy."
Her eyes had started to wake up and were now bright with amusement.
"So Tom and I go along with it to please her, and sometimes work in a Bruce Willis flick or a hand of five-card draw. Don't play poker with the kid, he's pretty damn good."
"I'll remember that." She settled herself more comfortably on the edge of the table, and her face quieted slightly as her mood seemed to shift. Max frowned, feeling her eyes probe his as if she were searching for something in particular. He was about to make a rather rude comment himself when she looked past him to Caroline.
"Okay,"
was all she said. Max turned to Caroline, his frown deepening. "What's that supposed to mean?" he asked.
"It means you have kind eyes,"
Dana answered for herself. He looked back at her, to find her in the same position, her expression now serene.
"That's all."
Then one russet brow shot up again, and one side of her wide mouth quirked up.
"I'm also in charge of prospective boyfriend monitoring, in addition to my teen-sitting duties. I take my responsibilities very seriously."
Max had the unsettling feeling that she was indeed very serious. At least she hadn't declared him some mutant serial killer or something. That was a very good thing, as Dana Dupinsky evidently had a great deal of influence in Caroline's life. He shifted on his cane, pointing his body toward her front door. "I need to go now," he said pointedly, hoping Ms. Dupinsky would make herself scarce so he could have a few more minutes alone with Caroline. "It was nice to have met you, Dana." Dana grinned once again.
"My cue to exit stage left." "Stage right,"
Caroline muttered from behind him.
"You need to powder your nose." "But Caroline, honey,"
Dana was practically laughing aloud,
"I've never powdered my nose in my life."
Caroline took a step forward, pulled her friend to her feet, and sent her towards the end of the hall, presumably to the bathroom.
"So you have a lot of powdering to make up for. Go now."
The last was hissed, and with a chuckle, Dana complied, but not before lightly chucking Caroline under the chin.
"You were right."
Dana looked over at Max, waggled her brows, then bent to whisper very loudly in Caroline's ear,
"Book 'em, Dano."
Max swallowed what was sure to have been a snort of laughter at the murderous expression on Caroline's normally happy face, even as a warm feeling bloomed inside his chest. She'd talked about him very favorably, if her scarlet cheeks were any indication. It was a good sign.
"Dana,"
she barked,
"bathroom, now." "Yes, Mommy. You'll tell me when it's safe to come out, won't you?" "Unlikely. Go."
Caroline pointed to the door as if directing a recalcitrant child. Dana did laugh aloud at this, but finally moved her feet in the indicated direction.
"Okay, okay. It was nice to meet you, Max,"
she called over her shoulder. The bathroom door slammed.
"I'm safely out of the way,"
she called, loudly enough to be easily heard. A beat of silence followed. Caroline cleared her throat.
"Some people say insanity runs in her family,"
she said, then turned to face him, her dimple in full relief.
Dana's about the closest thing to a sister I've ever had. I hope you can excuse her.
Max looked down at her smiling face and felt his heart do another one of those tuck-and-roll maneuvers.
Hey, you can't choose your family. You've met my brother, and you're still willing to have dinner with me again.
He pushed a lock of hair behind her ear, his fingers lingering to slide along the curve of her jaw. Her eyes widened abruptly, her dimple disappearing, her lips parting ever so slightly. It was an invitation, even if she didn't know it yet. Impulsively, he dropped his head, this time placing the very brief, very chaste peck directly on her lips.
Good night, Caroline.
She made no move to walk him to the door, continuing to stand where she was, staring up at him, her eyes now wide and shocked. Instinctively, he knew it had been a first for her. He also knew he was going to have one devil of a time waiting for Thursday night. Chapter 8. Boone, North Carolina, Wednesday, March 7th, 10:30 a.m. Lenny Farrell's father had retired to a large cabin in the mountains, complete with a paved driveway that held a shiny new bass boat. Stephen's mouth practically watered as he walked past it. He'd be fishing in one of these babies this weekend, thanks to Helen's blind date. Her name was Susanna Mendelson, and she was oh so excited to go out with a real police detective. She sounded very sweet and very young, and very un-Fisher-person-like. Turned out her daddy had a bass boat with a 200-horse motor and a GPS. Susanna Mendelson wasn't sure what the GPS was used for, but her daddy seemed to enjoy having it. He had the feeling his blind date on Saturday would fall in the vast majority of blind dates and be a total and complete disaster. A damn shame, because Susanna's daddy's boat sounded like a dream come true. He was still staring longingly at the boat from the front porch when the door was opened by a short, plump woman with a sweet smile. An incredible aroma met his nose. The little lady smiled broadly.
Good morning, Special Agent Thatcher. I'm Charlene Farrell. Please come in. My husband's expecting you.
She led him to her husband, who was sitting in an ancient barca lounger, his legs elevated.
Gabe, Special Agent Thatcher's here. Please have a seat.
Forgive me if I don't stand, Gabe Farrell thundered from across the room. A day of fishing with a pack of 10-year-old boys left me pretty sore. I might stand sometime next week.
Charlene bustled to cover his legs with an afghan, and Stephen bit back a smile when Gabe Farrell ripped the afghan off with an irritable frown.
I'm sore, Charlene, not infirm.
Charlene shook the afghan out flat and replaced it over Farrell's legs without missing a beat, then bustled from the room.
I'll go get coffee and crumb cake and leave y'all to your work.
Damnation, Farrell grumbled, ripping the afghan away again. Woman drives me utterly insane.
He settled himself again.
So talk, Thatcher. What brings you up to Boone on a pretty spring day, besides the promise of my lovely wife's crumb cake?
Stephen leaned back in his chair, feeling the starch doily on the back of the chair tickle the back of his neck. 7 years ago, Mary Grace Winters. Snow-white brows shot upwards.
I seem to recall a case, he responded dryly.
Stephen smiled.
So I hear. The boys down in Sevier County pulled a car out of Douglas Lake Sunday morning, he continued.
Her purse with license and Robbie's baby pictures was under the seat with Robbie's school backpack in the back.
Farrell's bushy brows bunched. But no bodies?
Not a one, sir.
I always knew that poor woman had met with some violent end.
Farrell narrowed his eyes.
I always suspected the husband had a hand in it.
He was never charged. Farrell sighed.
No, he wasn't. I found quite a bit of evidence indicating Winters had abused his wife, but nothing to indicate he had any part in her disappearance. It was damn frustrating.
Stevens straightened in his chair. You found evidence that Winters abused his wife? Such as? Farrell rubbed his hand across his neck, massaging.
You have all the photos?
Stephen brought out the two photos and held them up for Farrell's inspection. Just these.
Farrell winced. There were more. About 15 photos. X-rays, too. Showed several. Several, he repeated, enunciating slowly. Healed breaks. I can't remember them all. I do remember a number of radial forearm fractures and a break on her leg right here.
Farrell pointed to his middle thigh, then added sarcastically,
Gee, I wonder where those pictures and x-rays could have gone.
Stephen slipped the folder into his briefcase. Why was Rob Winters never formally charged? Farrell sighed.
You ever met the man?
Stephen shook his head. No.
He cried. Big, huge man. Cried like a baby. Made TV commercials, at first pleading for the return of his wife and child, then later pleading for any information on where their bodies could be found. He was so utterly convincing. My own Charlene was convinced he was innocent. He cooperated in every way to find him. Let us search the house, his bank accounts, everything.
Tell me about the house, Stephen said, pulling his own notepad from his breast pocket. Farrell nodded his approval of the question.
Not a stick of furniture out of place. A speck of dust would have been too lonely to stay on Mary Grace's floor. It was literally clean enough to eat off of. The spices were alphabetized and the newspaper was folded into precise thirds. Laundry detergent boxes were precisely 1/2 inch from the edge of the shelf in the laundry room. The pantry was organized by food group. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Textbook abusive spouse.
Yep, that and those photos were enough to convince me.
Where was Rob Winters the night they disappeared?
He was working second shift. He would have gotten home by 1:30 or so to find him missing. He didn't report them gone until morning, though. Maybe 7:30? It's all in the file. Or at least it was.
He paused when Charlene entered with a tray of coffee and the aromatic crumb cake.
Thank you, darling, Farrell said to his wife.
You're welcome.
Her eyes simply twinkled, conjuring the image of Mrs. Claus. I hear you're famous for your sweet potato pie, Stephen commented, taking the plate she offered. I'd hoped I might try it to see if your son is as truthful as he's always appeared to be. Charlene giggled, a youthful sound.
Oh, my. I can't serve sweet potato pie before noon. No, sir, it just wouldn't be proper. If you want to try my pie, you'll just have to come on back, won't you?
On the Afghan went, and just as quickly it was yanked away.
Y'all talk all you want, and just call if you need anything.
She turned at the door, caught Stephen's eye, and winked. She does the Afghan thing just to annoy you, Stephen observed.
Of course.
Farrell smiled fondly at the doorway she'd just vacated.
I've been with that woman for 50 years this past December. Never once raised my hand to her.
His smile dimmed.
Never once cheated on her either.
Stephen settled back in his chair, fork poised to spear cake. But Rob Winters cheated? Farrell's old face hardened.
Made me sick. Not so much the fact that he had the neighbor on the side.